As Taoiseach, I want to see everyone reach their full potential. I want to help create an Ireland that drives innovation and creativity, an Ireland that is compassionate, tolerant and respectful.
On the things that really matter to workers and families, you have comprehensively failed, and no amount of bragging or bluster will disguise that fact.
Hello, I've got my headphones on the right way. So this is Your Politics, RTE's weekly politics podcast from Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler. With me, Sandra Hurley, Tommy Mescal, and joining us in a moment, Juliette Gash. It's been Jack Chambers, the newly elevated Minister for Finance, as well as the Fianna Fáil Deputy Leader, his first full day in the job, Sandra.
Yes, and he was out doing a press conference this afternoon, kind of setting out his stall, I guess. And it's clear that he has been hoovering up the briefs that the officials have written for him, because he was throwing in all the buzzwords in relation to how he was going to manage the finances, and I suppose particularly the tax package, because that is really his side of the budget. He was stressing prudence, being careful, not squandering what Michael McGrath has built up, but he did drop a few hints. He did mention income tax cuts. No surprise that hard-pressed families, all government ministers will be looking to give them something in the budget. He stuck to the line on RTE, which is the Fianna Fáil line, which is that it's important to have a public contribution in terms of the TV licence fee. So he certainly isn't of the view that it should all come from Exchequer funding, as Catherine Martin, the media minister, has put forward. But overall, he was not a total surprise. His name had been in the mix, but he is very young. He is 33. And while he is very accomplished in many things, he doesn't have an economic background. He mentioned being straight into the meetings with the party leaders and Pascal Donoghue to put together the summer economic statement for 2 weeks' time. And that really sets out the numbers for the budget, the parameters. So he is going to be incredibly busy. And it is a huge step up.
How much freedom do you think he'll have? I mean, Pascal Donoghue, with all his experience, Micheál Martin will be keeping a close eye. A lot of the big decisions, of course, will be made by the party leaders. It's a bit like having a couple of kiggery looking at your homework, isn't it?
Pascal Donoghue was asked about this yesterday at a doorstep, and he said that he was confident that the two of them could agree to a budget. So perhaps laying down the marker that Pascal Donoghue will definitely be having a say as well, as you would imagine, in the upcoming budget. But given that this is the budget that will be the final one before an election, whether it is in the autumn or whether they do go the full term, you'd imagine that the leaders too would have quite a say in what is contained in that pre-election budget. And so how much room for manoeuvre Jack Chambers himself will have, perhaps not too much, but time will tell. But it's going to be a steep learning curve.
Yes, and it's interesting as well, isn't it, when we learned as well this week that Michael McGrath was getting the nomination for European Commissioner. There seemed to be, a lot of certainty on the Irish side that, you know, an economic ministry would be ours for the taking at the European table. May not be that simple.
It's not always that simple, no. It's a sort of, well, we're sending our big guns, therefore we deserve this. But Ireland is still a small player in the European scheme of things, and also we've been a little bit late to the table too, and I think there is possibly the idea that we're only offering one candidate rather than offering a man and a woman, which Ursula von der Leyen has demanded in the past. That may stand against him.
The other thing about Jack Chambers is you have to go back to Bertie and Brian Cowan, don't you, to see an example of, you know, a leader, a Taoiseach who has straddled, you know, and run his party for a very long time, almost anointing the successor.
Yes, and if you remember Bertie Ahern, just after that 2007 general election, he did an interview with RTE where he anointed Brian Cowan, and he said very clearly at that point that Brian Cowan should follow him as the next leader of Fianna Fáil. And this really is Micheál Martin putting his imprimatur on a leadership contest, whenever that might be. It's not in the immediate future, but he is putting Jack Chambers, making it clear that he is his man. And it also shows that in politics, loyalty is everything, isn't it, in terms of promotions. Jack Chambers seen as very close to Micheál Martin. Others in the parliamentary party might occasionally have sniped that Jack Chambers was doing Micheál Martin's bidding when he was chief whip and in terms of internal party matters. But loyalty is really important.
Actually, it's interesting because a couple of people asked me, because, you know, he doesn't have a huge public profile yet, Jack Chambers. A lot of people going, Jack Chambers? Really? What's he like as a personality, as a character? How would you all describe him?
He He's probably one of the more quiet ones, as quiet as politicians can be, probably one of the more reserved ones. But he was a whip previously, so, you know, he's well known amongst the party.
Did he manage to put the fear of God into some of the rebels who were sniping about Micheál Martin's leadership at the time, coming into the room when they were having meetings and stuff like that?
Yeah, and in terms of his personal life, I suppose he did come out a short time ago, and Leo Varadkar was speaking yesterday. He said, you know, Jack Chambers could be a future, the second openly gay Taoiseach. He's very into sport. That's what I know about him. I know at the weekends he does loads of sporty stuff, and he did love when he was in that ministry. He was a junior minister in the Department of Tourism and Sport, and he would have handled a lot of the sporting fixtures and all of that. So that's definitely something that is big for him. I did ask him today if he was going to Taylor Swift's, because that seems to be the thing that everybody's talking about. He's not, but we do know that Pascal Donoghue is going, because he's into all types of music. Yes, I think I did see something yesterday that he's going to Taylor Swift this weekend, and last weekend he was at Pearl Jam, so he has a very wide musical taste.
He was asked about it at that doorstep yesterday, Pascal Donoghue, and he wasn't happy with the first answer he gave. So when the press conference was over, he asked the journalist to stick around so he could so he could check the name of a song that he wanted to be sure on, because I think he was asked about his favourite Taylor Swift song.
You know how to ball and I know Aristotle. Let's
He is seen as a very, very hard worker. That's one thing I'll say, is that he's very, very diligent and puts in the hard yards. Look, that can be said about a lot of politicians, but that's certainly what people do say about him, that he's really diligent and spends a long time. He will have to read into a very complicated brief, so that'll stand him, and maybe that's why he can't go to Taylor Swift this weekend.
It does mean, and just before we move on, Sandra, it does mean that really, you know, obviously you've new Taoiseach Simon Harris, who's, you know, moving at the speed of light practically. You do have this changing of the guard anointment in Fianna Fáil, with Jack Chambers becoming deputy leader and finance minister. We'll also have a new leader and deputy leader of the Green Party. It means Sinn Féin, they're talking about change, but their lineup will look much more the same than the government parties.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, two of the main government parties, their leader has changed, and then there's personnel changes in Fianna Fáil. So they are presenting a different lineup, different faces on the poster, whereas Sinn Féin is caught in this bind, I think, where they have been promising change for a long time. They campaigned on it in the last election. We know they're going to campaign on it in the next election, but they haven't been able to bring forward change.
Any news yet on the Super Junior? We're speaking, at the time we're speaking, it's about, what, 10 past four? Yeah, 10 past four on Thursday afternoon. Some anxious hearts still beating?
Yes, some names doing the rounds. Maybe Dara Cleary for a Super Junior role. Mary Butler has been mentioned as well. And then that would mean a backbencher being elevated to a junior ministry. People talking about sort of the class of 2016, people like James Lawless, Niamh Smith, but also Cormac Devlin's name has been thrown out there. He was elected in 2020. There may be an incorporeal cabinet meeting happening right now to sign off on that. Okay. So we should hear in the near future.
OK, and if we hear anything, obviously, before the end of this podcast, we'll bring it to you. The other big news, I suppose, in the chamber this week, Natasha O'Brien, let's talk about that. She was in the visitors' gallery. The TDs were talking about the fact that Cathal Crotty had not been sentenced, and the public outrage and her outrage, Natasha's outrage over this, and the Ceann Comhairle leading the Dáil in a round of applause.
Yeah.
But then the Holly Cairns question too.
I know, and it was Seán Fraoile also said, the Ceann Comhairle also said, we are on your side. It was a very strong outpouring of support for Natasha O'Brien. Unsurprisingly, I suppose, the country has kind of galvanised behind her. Cathal Crotty, her attacker, was convicted and given a suspended sentence. And she described that as not being justice for her. And she, in the wake of it, even said that she would rather relive the attack itself than see him get off, as she saw it. It's complicated, it is. And obviously, Holly Cairns made some very important points on it. And I think there was also an important interjection.
Never again,
until the next time. We're supposed to have a zero-tolerance approach. Cathal Berry made some interesting points too. He is a former Army Ranger, independent TD. And he was just saying that the Army, the Defence Forces, have been crying out for new regulations on this. He described himself as a former liaison officer. That was one of the issues that Natasha O'Brien had with the process, that there was an Army liaison officer there ostensibly providing support, or that's how she saw it, whereas technically he was there observing the court case. But Colm Barry said they want new regulations, and they don't change the regulations, the government does.
And under the current regulations, of course, the defence forces have to wait until a court case is concluded before they can begin disciplinary action. So we had the Taoiseach earlier this week, Sandra, being, you know, very outraged that it was unacceptable that, you know, people wouldn't know about outstanding court cases. But a lot of questions being asked now about the government's responsibility in terms of those regulations.
Yes, because ultimately, of course, oversight, the ultimate oversight of the Defence Forces does come back to government and to the Department of Defence. And I think Natasha O'Brien has really succeeded in putting this firmly into the political sphere, because it is up to the government to make changes here. And she has been a very strong, passionate advocate, and she doesn't show any signs of letting up. And I think she'll follow up and really keep the pressure on.
And the other issue, of course, which is being highlighted by the rape crisis centres, and again, this is something that's been raised by victims of violence before, women victims of violence in particular, the use of a victim's counselling notes potentially in court. And again, there's to be a review of that, I understand. But, you know, again, these are problems that have been highlighted for quite a while.
Yes, and on Morning Ireland this morning, there was some, you know, very affecting testimony, I suppose, from real-life victims who had been to court and some of their experiences, and almost talking about being re-traumatised by having their counselling notes, which would, you would expect to be private, having those introduced into court cases, and one person making the point that it's only in rape cases, she said, that this type of practice would continue. So it doesn't seem something like something that is right, that is reasonable. Perhaps these things should be private. And it certainly, I think a lot of people would welcome if a review is to be carried out there.
And the other big Doyle Chamber news, the Migration Pact, after all the talk, and it certainly featured heavily in the EU election campaign, finally passed.
Yes, yeah, so the Dáil decided to opt in. 79-72, I think, was the final
vote. So close enough.
Close enough, but the government had said that they were going to opt into this, so perhaps no great surprise. The government has the majority in the House, so yeah, it would have been a surprise if they didn't get it passed. They just agreed to opt in. It's over the next 2 years now that they'll have to develop the legislation and the infrastructure to give effect to this EU directive, which will be taking effect across many EU states and is seen as the EU's answer to what has been a crisis now for many years, that being that of migration. And of course, it's getting opposition on both sides of the political spectrum, some saying it's not tough enough and some saying it's way, way too tough.
And EU politics certainly hotting up at the moment, aren't they?
Simon Harris is in Brussels today for a European Council summit, and we expect that Ursula von der Leyen will be able to get the agreement of the heads of state in terms of her second term as European Commissioner. Of course, she'll then have a job of work to do to win over the support of the European Parliament. You'd imagine that vote would take place during the next plenary session, which will be in mid-July. But that could be quite a difficult battle for her. In fact, some of the Fianna Fáil MEPs have been quite vocal during the recent European election campaign that they will not be supporting her candidacy. You would wonder, will they come under pressure now over the coming weeks, given that Michael McGrath is looking for a senior portfolio?
So the theory is, if Ireland doesn't, and Ireland, of course, the first thing we're not doing is we're not sending a female option as commissioner. And the second thing, if Ireland, Irish MEPs, what if government ones in particular don't vote for Ursula von der Leyen in the parliament, that somehow that would impact on Michael McGrath's chances of getting a job?
Some people are speculating that it might, but it is a secret vote. So they could always vote in favour of her, even though publicly they're saying they're not. But maybe you need that public endorsement. In terms of Ireland not nominating a second name, a female name, Micheál Martin was asked about this when he did a press conference on Tuesday. He gave a firm impression that even if he was asked to give a female name, he'd still want Michael McGrath to get the job. Mairead McGuinness's side, she's the current commissioner, I think they are saying that if a female name is required, they would like to see her name go forward. And they are of the opinion, although they would say this, that Ursula von der Leyen would like to see her in her commission again.
Yes, it'll be interesting to see how all of that works out. But there's, I mean, Giorgia Meloni and her relationship with France, and again, the weakness of German Chancellor Scholz after he came in third after the AfD, wasn't it? So European there's a real shift going on in European politics at the moment, isn't there? And this next commission, the haggling that's going on at the moment to try and shape that next commission, will show a lot about the political direction we're going in.
And Georgia Maloney seems to be playing hardball. She is very unhappy at having been left out of this carve-up of the top jobs, because we know that six people got in a room, apparently, and sorted it out between the EPP getting the commission job, Renew getting the foreign policy chief, and the Socialists and Democrats getting the presidency of the European Council. And Georgia Maloney very unhappy because her grouping came in third, so she's left out of that. So she is kicking up today. The expectation is she's pushing for a very senior portfolio for Italy, something like trade, some of the absolute top tier job. There seems to be a push now this afternoon to kind of embrace her a bit more. Donald Tusk, the Polish Prime Minister, has been making more emollient comments around that. But the horse trading is going on in earnest, and you'd have to wonder, where does Ireland sit in that horse trading? It won't be decided today. These commissionership jobs, obviously Ursula von der Leyen has to get through her election, but realistically Ireland might be looking at something on a more mid-tier level. Ursula von der Leyen has a lot of considerations in terms of geography, gender, the political groupings, all the rest of it. And Michael McGrath, while he is very experienced domestically, and he is known in Europe, he is a first-time commissioner as well. He's not a former prime minister. These types of people tend to get the bigger jobs.
And Juliette, you voted this week in the French elections. These French elections look absolutely wild. And it's certainly, again, in early July, it's going to start to become clear who is speaking for France and from what direction.
I get to vote in France. I'm a French citizen through my mother, who's French. She's currently in France, and there's an awful lot of shock, huge shock that Macron did this, that he called the election in the wake of their poor performance in the European parliamentary elections. And people are just going, this is a gamble with the future of France. And it's really existential because essentially he said, well, I clearly don't have the support. Let's call an election. The theory being that people vote differently in national elections than they do in European parliamentary elections. But if he's wrong, it's going to be a very, very different picture in France, where the Rassemblement National, the Marine Le Pen's former party, she's no longer head of it, but it is her party, that it is going to take as many seats as it could to get a lead. And that's
and the
a
guy
very
who's,
different direction.
Who's their likely prime minister? Tell us about him.
28-year-old Jordan Bardella. He TikTok famous, he's described as, which, you know, we all kind of go, oh, isn't that hilarious? But if he's getting into the youth vote's ear, that changes things, because his message is getting out. And I thought it was interesting to hear the footballer Kylian Mbappe saying that, you know, vote, please, and don't vote for them. You know, they're, you know, people don't like sports people getting involved in politics. But he was saying, if you look like me, which is a black man, you don't vote for them. And I thought that was a very interesting intervention. But people in France are frightened about what kind of direction this could lead France.
And again,
in
a bit like, you know, there's this the market sense of the markets waiting in the wings to cast their verdict on whatever political outcome emerges, because, of course, the French economy, I mean, if France being France, but there is a massive problem with their deficit, isn't there?
Yeah, and also I think the difficulty is that, like, so France, like many other countries, has whether you want to call it a problem with immigration, but has an immigration issue. But not just that, France has second and first generation people who consider themselves French, but may have been, you know, their parents might have been born in Morocco or Algeria. There are certain undertones in the Rassemblement National who are saying that they are not as French as people who are perhaps a little more white. And that is frightening for investors, but is also frightening for lots of French people.
It's going to be interesting to watch. And of course, we've had the UK election campaign going on, Tommy. It's been fairly, I mean, a week to voting. Guess the outcome.
I think the question is, how much will Labour win by, and will it be a massive defeat for the Conservative Party? And you've even seen some senior people in the Conservative Party now change tack and basically plead with voters not to give Labour a supermajority. And the fear in Labour now is, because the polls have been indicating such success for the party in the upcoming election, that perhaps complacency could set in, and that maybe that could work against the Labour Party. But certainly all signs are indicating that it will be Keir Starmer heading to Downing Street next Thursday.
I was talking to you earlier.
Or next Friday, I should say.
I remember, because I'm very old, but when the Blair election, and that morning in London, and you had that sense, that whole voting day going into the next morning, and that dawn, and they're rocking up, and things could never get better, and up to Downing Street. that was a sense of a wave of positive change. And there was a sense of, you know, optimism. And, you know, the British economy was certainly in a very different state. Britain was still, of course, part of the EU. This has a sense of more least worst. Is that right?
Yeah, it's sort of a desire to get the Conservative Party out, but it's not necessarily a desire to see the Labour Party take charge. There's kind of an apathy, I think. There was a debate last night between the two leaders, the Prime Minister and the Labour leader, Keir Starmer, and one of the best... the question that got the biggest round of applause was from somebody who asked if this was the best that the political system had to offer these two men. So I think a weariness amongst the electorate in terms of what is on offer. And even opinion polls would suggest as well, there's not a huge amount of support or likability for Keir Starmer. So that's an issue for him. But perhaps that's what he wants. He wants boredom. He wants calmness to return to Downing Street. And he has sort of indicated that himself in interviews.
And Sandra, more for anyone who's a political junkie, more political debating to look forward to tonight on CNN.
Yes, so you've got a big debate between the President Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And yes, people turning out to see two octogenarians. And I think there's a parallel there with the UK. There's sort of, you speak to American friends and there's no great love for either candidate. Again, people just not very impressed with what is on offer, and anything could happen between now and November. It's really not clear yet exactly what way it's going to go. But certainly if you're a political watcher, yes, you've got the American election, the British election and an upcoming Irish election to look forward to.
CNN have developed these special mute buttons. So apparently if one candidate wants to shout over the other, which certainly was the experience between Biden and Trump met in 2020, it won't be heard, apparently, by the audience. You know, a bit like Eurovision when you couldn't hear the booing in the audience. There's all these things. And they've shown it to both candidates. The other thing I don't understand, actually, about all these debates is what, I mean, we're looking at two rather elderly men. And the whole visual grammar of debates is the candidates have to stand at a podium for 2 hours. I mean, you would never, it's just bad manners, isn't it? Asking people to give them a stool at least.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think it's hard again against for women candidates who are expected to rock up to a debate. And high heels just look better on telly. They do in most cases. And, you know, if you've been out campaigning all day long and then for the sake of, you know, because everybody was commenting about Regina Doherty wearing her runners. Of course she
had
her
special election runners, which if you've seen any female candidate out canvassing, they have to wear runners because there's so much ground to cover. They're running between houses as they try and shake as many hands as possible. But yeah, there is that kind of the debate set piece and the visual of how a candidate presents. And it is going to be difficult for the two quite older men tonight. And we did see Joe Biden recently, was it on Juneteenth in America, and he looked like he wasn't quite with it actually when the singing was happening around him. I think people will be looking to see how on top of things he is tonight.
And Trump's been getting very concerned about batteries and sharks and things like that in his rally speeches as well. All right, anyone going to Taylor Swift, by the way? Along with Pascal, well, not with Pascal, but
no, I can't say that I am.
Not my other half is going. She's going. She is, yeah. But I'm not. No.
Okay, so you'd be the first to know whether Travis Kelce rocks out on stage again as well, would you?
Yeah, perhaps I would.
Apparently it's all worth $150 million to the economy.
The price that people are paying for tickets is really extraordinary. She's got a lot of fans.
Yeah. I think it averages out, if you add in the tickets and
hotels,
about 1,000 per person going.
Yeah, it's astonishing. I don't know where people find all of that. And this surge pricing thing where tickets just seem to have become more and more expensive for concerts like this, that they tailor it to the demand. And
tailor it to the demand. Well done.
Well, it was an action, but anyway.
Okay, on that Aristotelian note, we leave you. Talk to you soon.
Bye.